If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
The first one's normally the most difficult because you've got to have confidence and faith in yourself. And it's real estate, it's property, stuff can go wrong. That's the nature of the beast. It's how you mitigate against that.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Rob Smallbone is the author of the number one Amazon bestseller, Buy to Let, How to Get Started, and is co-host of the Property Nomads podcast. Rob has a passion for travel, Liverpool FC, and the New York Jets. And he's asked that you don't hold that against him, though. Rob believes in helping others and delivering great and varied content. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Great to be able to add value to our audience today. So thank you for taking time out of your day as well.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. The pleasure's all mine. The same questions ask everybody who comes on here is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Well, yeah, where to start? So I guess in a nutshell, regular kid growing up. I went to school, done all right. Went to university from there, didn't know any better. Graduated from university in 2010. Went traveling with my now business partner. Went traveling Southeast Asia, across the USA. Went overland from, we greyhounded it from Los Angeles to New York. So that's a story in itself. Done that. Came back to the UK, went to work for a couple of years, didn't know any different. Went traveling again, went to Brazil for the Football World Cup or Soccer World Cup in Brazil 2014. Traveled South and Central America. And really, it was around those countries. Aaron and I were doing a lot of talking. You get a lot of bus journeys, you get a lot of spare tires. We're on the chat going, you know, what can we do? There's got to be something out there that we can invest in. Something we can invest in where we're going to, you know, start generating long-term wealth, but also generating some good cash flow where it's not reliant on us having to work. Basically, how can we create how can we create a form of passive income? And we picked, I'll say real estate, obviously realize you're United States based. So we said real estate property. Okay, we'll do that. Came back and from there, just started off listening to podcasts. There was a couple of podcasts around at the time, 2015, 2016. I started reading books, doing this, doing that, chatting with other people, getting myself a bit educated on a few things. And just from there, got the first one. And from there, it's just built up and built up. So that's pretty much a nutshell.
Man, that's a really cool story. I love the forward thinking. You know, not a lot of people who are riding Greyhound buses across the United States are sitting there saying to themselves, how do I create passive income? You know, that's just not the advanced thinking that is going on typically on those machines. So that's pretty funny. But I guess, you know, so tell us, what are you guys buying now? What did you select? I mean, obviously real estate, but then inside of that, what did you guys start buying and how did you do it?
Yeah, so we're from the south of England. So Aaron's from a place called city called Brighton, right on the south coast. I'm from a place called Reading, which is about 45 miles west of London. And here in the UK, we've got this sort of odd divide. You've got north and south. You have your south is more expensive. We're a very London-centric country. It is the UK, very London-centric. So the south's more expensive, but you've got more economic prospects. The further north you go, general rule of thumb is the cheaper stuff becomes. There are exceptions there, but that's a general rule of thumb. So we sat down and decided, we want cash flow. We're not too fussed about capital growth because we want to be buying this real estate, this property. We're going to be holding it for our lifetimes without a shadow of a doubt. So we're not too fussed on the capital growth. It's all about the cash flow. What works well in here? We've got a thing called buy to let, buy a family house, rent it out to a family. That worked wonders here in England. So we've done some traveling, went up and down, ended up in a place called Kingston upon Hull, which is in the east of England. I relocated here 4 years ago. I moved up because, again, the traveling aspect didn't bother me moving a few hours up the road. So the portfolio is predominantly what we would call buy-to-let properties, family houses. It's a strong rental area up here. That's the bricks and mortar portfolio. It's mainly up in the north of England and mainly cash flow purposes.
Right. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. So these are a lot of what we would call single family residences here. Is that right? Or is there some multifamily mixed in that as well?
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay.
No, single family residences. Yep.
Right. Are you doing all those on long-term leases, or are you doing, as a traveling guy, I would imagine that something along the lines of Airbnb or short-term rental would be an appealing asset class for you?
It can be. It's not something we've actually explored too much. So how we would do it over here is you normally get predominantly families, but do have single people. They'll sign up on a 6-month or 12-month assured short hold tenancy agreement, an AST as we call it. And then that's it. We find that if you buy in good areas where you've got good transport links, you know, near to schools, the fundamentals, which are the same up and down in around the world, to be fair. And if right. you're providing a good quality product to people, then chances are they're going to stay. So yeah, the single family lets, as we call them, we find that they're the staple of the portfolio.
Right. Are there any challenges that you can think of? And I don't know if you guys invest in the U.S. Do you invest in the U.S. as well, or is it just there in the U.K.?
Just in the U.K.
Okay. Are there any, what was I going to ask you? Are there any challenges? Oh, I know. Yeah. So any challenges, like as far as laws go in the U.K. that really make being a landlord difficult?
Oh, well, where can I start? Yes. Yes, there are. There are multiple challenges. We have this thing really here in the UK where it's more stereotyped than anything. But, you know, if you're a landlord, you know, you're a white right-wing capitalist pig. No one likes you. You're not meant to make money out of housing. All of the stereotypes that you get. There's a lot of laws. Some of them are a bit nonsensical tax-wise. But there are a lot of safety laws which are very good for everyone. Things like gas safety checks, electrical safety checks, to make sure that the homes are as secure and as safe as possible. Stuff like that's fantastic. Not an issue with that. Absolutely fine. But there's various things tax-wise. That depends how you set your company up, what you're doing, how you're doing it. I'm not a tax expert, but there are always going to be challenges in this industry. And I think our government, or it doesn't really matter who's in charge, landlords, landladies, whoever, then normally it's an easy vote winner to have a bash at them. I certainly find that in the UK. I don't know if that's the same over there in the US, Sam. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say it is. I would say it is. Anytime you're the business owner, you are not the business owner, landlord, whoever you are, you're typically out of favor, which is whatever. Just because, yeah, let's not go down that rabbit hole too far. I think we both understand what we bring to the table and what we do for society. So yeah, I don't need to expound on that any further. I guess talk to us a little bit about, you know, what your freedom number is, or maybe where you guys want to go with your business as a whole. Like, have you hit a certain threshold and you said, hey, this is it? Or do you guys just see your business ever expanding?
We see it as forever expanding. We've both got targets, £10,000 a month each, so £20,000 a month in total. I don't know what that is in dollars nowadays. Let's call it. I don't even know the number. But that's what we've got in our head. But for us in our head, that's not a, oh my God, we've got to get there by 2023. It's, we know we're going to be doing this for years and years and years. We don't have to be doing this 24 hours a day. We've got systems in place. We've got good people in place. We know how to analyze, you know, just like yourself. You know, you'll know how to analyze a deal straight away. You'll know if it's worth it. If you say yes to it, then you can figure out a way to get it in your portfolio. Where we're at the moment is we're doing all right in terms of numbers. We're at the stage where the thing that keeps us going is a lot of travel, and that's a bit restricted at the moment. So, you know, why not just take advantage of all the extra opportunities that we can have here by acquiring as many properties as we can. So we'll get around to the traveling at some point, but as and when, as time goes on, the travel keeps us going, that keeps us entertained, as and when we can get out and about. Want to get to the goal of £10,000 a month each, but there is no, as I said before, there's not a massive rush on that. We know that the strategy that we've got with the single family lets, it's not always the highest cash flowing strategy. We appreciate that, but given the economics of where we are in this country, demand for that sort of property is always going to be there. It's certainly in our lifetime, it's always going to be there. So you might as well play to the economics and suit the demand.
Right. No, I love that. How have you guys gone about financing your projects?
I always joke with people and say, if you walk around with a shotgun, that normally makes people say yes. That's joking aside, just got to be yourself. Got to have someone. People are struggling with obtaining financing. If you're looking to get like angel investment or joint venture finance, yeah, the first one's normally the most difficult, because you've got to have confidence and faith in yourself. And it's real estate, it's property, stuff can go wrong. That's the nature of the beast. It's how you mitigate against that. First set of finance, we were lucky, it was family finance. So we've just built that. And as we built the portfolio along, business partner Aaron's got really good connections. He's a risk and compliance manager by trade, by nature. So he's speaking to a lot of people all the time, and he knows how to analyze something down to the very last detail. It's just about being confident. Tell people what you do, have fun doing it. Don't take it take it seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. Have fun, and people will work with you because they like you. And I'm guessing it's the same with you, Sam. People, investors work with you just because they like you and what the Brick and Investment Group stands for.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So I guess the answer you've given me, tell me if I'm hearing this correctly, is really you guys have raised private capital to buy a lot of your deals. Are you guys able to secure long-term financing from lenders as well?
Yeah, we've had no issues with lending either. A lot of the lenders make up their own rules as they go along. It frustrates me sometimes. But if you put a good enough business proposal together, we find it's easy. It's just playing their game. How many hoops have I got to jump through? At the end of the day, it's going to be worth your time. You know, cost of borrowing is dirt cheap. We know we're in it for the long term. But yeah, getting regular bank financing, we would say that hasn't been an issue either.
Right. So you guys are using a combination, I guess the final answer is you guys are using a combination of private equity or private lenders on the equity side, and then backfilling that, of course, with just traditional bank financing in order to make your acquisitions.
Yeah, that's a very simple way of summarizing my long-winded answer. Yeah.
Hey man, no worries. I love hearing people think on this stuff. So talk to us about some of the deal metrics. I mean, you know, here in the States, it's obviously, it's area by area. You know, in one area you're going to get, you know, Memphis, where I'm based out of, is known for cash flow. Like, and of course those numbers even have shrunk in the last few years, just like everyone else's have. But still, even so, across the country, Memphis, thinking of Toledo, maybe Cincinnati, places like that, you can still get really good cash flow based upon, you know, as a percentage of what you're buying. What are some of the numbers you guys look for, and what do those metrics look like in your investment neck of the woods?
So for ourselves, we look at net return on investment. So we will simply got a basic deal analyzer. What's the cost of buying a property? What are all the fees that you're going to get? Mortgage fees, broker fees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, legal fees. What's the rent? What's the likely management charge? And that's normally about 10%. I'll be fine on average. And then that all goes into the calculator. And if the net return on investment is 20% or above, great. You know, that's good enough for us. Thumbs up. We'll go ahead and crack on. If it's below that, we won't do it. Yeah, we just won't do it. So that's probably the key metric that we have. We don't look at gross yield, pointless. It just is, because it's not taking into account expenses that may or may not come up. You've got to take that into account. And yeah, that's why we look at net ROI, as I call it.
So you're looking for a 20% annualized net ROI?
Yeah. We find in the north of England, that is easily achievable, easily achievable.
That's amazing. I mean, there's investors here in the States that, I mean, even here in Memphis, that just aren't hitting that. So, and I would have expected, and which is the reason I ask is just simply because I would have expected that your prices for land and houses and things like that would just be that much higher than ours. So that's really cool. Good for you guys hitting a 20% return. That's awesome. Good for you. Talk to us about your podcast. I want to hear why the Property Nomads podcast, what it stands for, why you guys launched it, and really just kind of your thoughts behind that.
Yeah, so the Property Nomads podcast had quite an interesting journey, actually, in the 2.5 years since it's been around and about. Initially, there was another guy in the podcast called Matt. He actually came up with the name Property Nomads podcast, a great name. But he's since left the podcast aspect of the company, and we've transferred it into, you know, myself and Aaron now. But so kudos to him for coming up with the name. Great name. The purpose of the Property Nomads podcast is twofold. The very, very long-term aim of the podcast is for it to become a travel podcast. When things ease up a little bit, yeah, Aaron and I have got a lot of plan. You know, want to go to more major events around the world. We want to, for example, you know, buy a Lada and go driving around Kazakhstan, you know, stuff like that. And we want to be able to document that as well through video and podcast. That's a long way of saying, in the long run, we want it to be a travel podcast. In the short run, our experience, our knowledge is real estate, is property. So the purpose of the podcast is to provide as much value as we can to people. And if we can do that I rant a lot, stuff like that. So we do little ranty episodes, get people on to talk about tax, talk about, you know, eco initiatives, anything. as long as we're adding value, and we always say to our audience, if you like what you're listening to, you know, give us a 5-star rating, thumbs up, or email us. You know, if you don't like something, let us know. Not a problem. If you like something, let us know. And this doesn't happen too often, so I'm not going to pretend that it does. But every once in a while, and you probably had the same, Sam, is you do get the odd social media message, or you get an odd email going, actually, do you know what, Rob, I've been listening to your podcast, or Sam, I've been listening to your podcast, or whatever it is. In fact, you've helped me get started on my in real estate, in property. I'm grateful for that. You know, you've changed my life. Now, that's happened once or twice in a couple of years. For me, that's worth it just to get a message like that, 100%.
Man, that's cool. Yeah, that's, again, I love the name, and that's why I really wanted to give you a chance to dive in and just kind of explain what the Property Nomads podcast is. That's fantastic. So we should look forward when lockdowns ease up and the world hopefully goes back to doing business to following your exploit as you gallivant around the globe and show us all the cool places that we're missing.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the aim. And yeah, we're not able to do that without having the passive income in the background. That's the nooks and crannies of all this. That's the key thing. Get that in the background, and then that will enable you to be able to go out and about. Yeah, I calculated this a little while ago, and I was a bit of research on India. Yeah, how much could you spend on, you know, in India per day? I reckon, within reason, you could probably spend £20 in India a day and have a decent, you know, not opulent, but you could get by very, very comfortably. £20 a day for 30 days in a month, for argument's sake, £600 a month times two, right? Two people, £1,200. I mean, come on. Yeah, Aaron and I are about the experiences. We like that sort of stuff. We're not in it for the 5-star hotels. Got to have a yacht. Got to get in the helicopter there. It's like, nah, you know, we'll slum around on the train, chat with the locals. That's how we like to travel. And that can be quite cost effective. So yeah, watch this space. There'll be loads of stuff coming your way.
Right. And I think your point there, the full circle there, is that your investments in real estate, your planning, your devising strategies, getting the right systems and people in place such that you can take off. I mean, without all of that, without building and scaling your business to a point where you can effectively just check out for a month or two without any of those things, then travel is right off. Property Nomads podcast is really just a real estate podcast, and there's not much in the way of nomading about it. So
exactly.
I think that's the high aim that so many of us look for, is that eventually, and I think that it's every investor's aim, is time. Like, when we get the time and money freedom back, that's what we're working towards. So good for you guys for making that happen and strategically making it happen. That's really cool. Let's jump here into the final four, Robert, if we can. And the first question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Just get started. It's easy to get stuck in analysis paralysis. It's very easy to talk yourself out of doing something, no matter what it is, not necessarily buying a home, but whatever it is. Just take the plunge and get started. You'll learn much more by doing it that way. So don't sit on the fence, crack on and get started.
Love it. Number two is this: when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Reading. I do quite a lot of reading. So various books, not just, they don't have to be mindset books. I read a lot of history, a lot of economics, love reading that sort of stuff. And that just keeps me mentally fresh, which means I can then put that back into the business.
Right. That's great. Number three: when it comes to investing in the world, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Adding value through books and podcasts. As long as I continue to write, to enjoy doing that, continue to produce podcast episodes, that's my way at the moment of giving back, adding value, and hopefully people out there is giving them the impetus to do what they need to do.
Right, man, that's great. Number four is, how do people get in touch with you?
So a couple of ways you can get in touch. I always say to contact me personally, email is the best way, rob@tpmpodcast.com. Again, I apologize for being a Jets fan, but someone's got to support them. You can also check out the podcast, Property Nomads Podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, the usual places. Or if you're interested in some literature, head across to Amazon and you can find Buy to Let, How to Get Started, and 101 Top Property Tips as well. Not just UK based, there's a lot of generic information in there that would suit people worldwide. So they'd be the things to do.
That's awesome. Rob, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Sam, thank you very much for yours as well. Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen,
If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.